Hey folks, you're listening to the FinTech Newscast. Our guest this week is Paul Burkett, the founder and CEO of Automation Finance, a company doing really interesting things with distressed home mortgage assets. Stay tuned and hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news.
All right, let's get going. With me this week is my co-host, Steve.
Hey, John, good to be here.
Yeah, glad you're here as always. And our guest, Paul Burkett, CEO of Automation Finance. How are you doing?
Great, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
So tell us a bit about yourself and Automation Finance.
Well, it's a company I started about 5 years ago. I often say to people, only in America, because I came to this country in 2010 in a corporate job. And 5 years later, I run a fund that's bought and manages over $200 million of defaulted mortgages and employs 26 people. And that seems like a fairly regular story, maybe in the United States, but in Europe, I'm actually from Ireland. Such a thing is, there's just no way such a thing could happen. So it's the American
not
dream
a big
is still
deal at
alive
all.
And well.
Yeah, good to hear that. So business has been busy.
Yeah, I mean, I was an executive at Pepsi for about 18 years. And for 4 years before that, I worked at Procter & Gamble. And I'd always been a corporate guy, worrying about my pension and worrying about my retirement and all of that stuff. And came to the U.S. and saw just the opportunities that are here in the U.S. are just so much more attractive than they are elsewhere. And so I arrived here in 2010, and you can probably remember at that time the real estate industry was pretty bad. We were just after the last recession. Maybe we're starting another recession now. I hope not, but maybe. And I came and saw that you could buy houses in the United States for $80,000 or $90,000 that would rent for $1,500 a month. And that just seemed like an amazing opportunity to me. So I ended up raising small sums of money and ended up buying 30 houses, thinking that it would be a passive way to earn money every month. And any of your listeners who run rental property will know that it's anything but passive. Once you get past five or six, it really can become a full-time job. And so for me, the weekends were completely spent working with property managers, move-outs, move-ins, all this stuff. And I thought, well, I never really signed up to do this. I thought I'd just get checks every month, right? That's what you get from real estate because it's passive. But it didn't work out that way at all. And actually, like so many things, an accident leads you to a new business. I was buying a short sale from a very well-known bank. I won't mention the name, but they called me one day and said, hey, we cannot complete that short sale. And a short sale, for maybe some people don't know, it's where the bank sells the home or allows the borrower to sell the home for less than the mortgage. And so the bank takes a loss and the homeowner loses any equity they may have had in the home. But I was buying this house with the intention of rehabbing it a little and renting it, which is what I had been doing at the weekend. And the person at the bank said, hey, we can't sell you this short sale. We've sold the loan. And I thought, that seems very strange. What do you mean you've sold the loan? Oh, you've sold it to, let's say, Wells Fargo. Did you sell it to Wells Fargo? No. We sold it to some investor. And I thought that was very strange that an investor could own someone's mortgage. So I did a bit of research and ended up meeting with the guy who had bought. He was just a single member LLC, a sole trader, if you like, buying these mortgages in his local area and working with the borrowers to solve their distress, or foreclosing and taking the property back and rehabbing it and selling it. And I thought, wow, this seems like a much better business than my rental business. And so started researching it. And a year later, I bought 100 loans. And 2 years later, I bought more than 1,000. So it scaled a lot, lot better than rental property. And so I got bitten by the bug at that stage. And that was...
So how did it turn into like gathering investors into like on the website?
So what I started doing was I cashed in all my retirement and all of that and started buying these houses. And I was lucky. I started in 2010 and property prices, real estate prices were really low. And by 2014, when I started,
yeah,
I was just lucky though. It was just pure luck. But by 2013 they'd gone up a lot, so I had a bit of equity that I could use, and I then just put together a few pages and went seeing investors. The first thing I did was buy a few loans. I bought about 10 loans and just figured it out with those 10 loans. And ironically, or unfortunately, or perhaps both, the results from the first 10 loans were just spectacular. I mean, the returns were absolutely outstanding. And I thought, as I think we all do, oh, it's me. I was able to make these returns. I am the gifted one. And of course, I was just lucky again. So, but using that data, I was able to use to raise some more cash and buy a lot more loans. And then I needed institutional money. So I was going, to investment firms and paying very high rates of interest, 10, 12, 14% to buy loans. But over time, as you'll know and your listeners will know, when you build a track record, you have something to show to the next investor, and maybe they won't demand 12%. Maybe they'll be okay with 10 or 9 or 8 or 5, whatever, over time. And so most laterally, what we did was just at the end of last year, we got qualified by the Securities Exchange Commission under Regulation A, which means you can basically run what amounts to a mini IPO. So you file this document. It's about, 100 and odd pages thick with the SEC. They review it, and they allow you to solicit directly over the internet, or you put ads on TV or on billboards or on the radio, and have investors come and invest directly with you. So whereas before we had 6 or 8 institutional investors, names you'd have heard of who are professional investors, well, now we have hundreds of smaller investors like you and me who are subscribing 10, 15,000. In fact, our minimum is just $250. And some people it's do amazing. Come and just put in $250.
Yeah.
And it is amazing.
I've heard
and
about people, this Regulation A. How long did it take to get that initial approval? And time, money, and all that?
It was very difficult because while the act came out, it was called the Jobs Act under the Obama administration. And it has a much longer name than the Jobs Act. But it basically says it allows internet marketing for investment, which was precluded up until then. We were not allowed to do it. And so the total legal fees is about $100,000. And the reason for that is the SEC, I was very scared of dealing with the SEC because I thought they'd be this awful people, but they're really nice people. They're mostly lawyers, attorneys, kind of doc review people. And they hadn't seen too many of these Regulation A filings. So it took them quite a while to come back with questions, and you'd answer those questions, and then they'd come back with more questions. So from the beginning to the end, we were almost 24 months to get the filing approved. Now that didn't, and I'm not blaming the SEC, just in case they're listening. There was a government shutdown in there, and a lot of the questions they were asking were great questions. We didn't have the answers. They wanted this data or that data. So we had to go and do a lot of analysis and produce reports and stuff for them. So it wasn't an easy matter. I would say if we were to do it again, it would take probably 3 or 4 months. But the first time around took 2 years, just shy of 2 years.
So you guys take distressed home mortgage assets?
Yep.
And
we go
them?
To the banks. Yeah, well, typically what's happening right now, so the markets are in bad shape today and the last few days. The banks will all of a sudden be looking for liquidity, which they may not have been looking for even a week ago. And they'll have assets on their books that they don't want. So for example, mortgages where the borrower is not paying. Not all banks have that, but many banks have that. And they hold those, and for reasons we don't need to go into now, because it's quite kind of arcane accounting rules to do with liquidity ratios, there's an incentive for them to sell those loans because it allows them to release more funds to do new lending. So they'll sell them to a licensed entity like ours, and we'll buy them at a discount. So let's say the pool is all houses of value of 100 grand. We'll buy those loans for roughly 60 grand each. So if you're thinking of buying a house at 60 cents on the dollar, but we're buying the mortgage at 60 cents on the dollar. Now, why does it trade at such a discount? Well, the first thing is you need to know what you're doing. So you need to be a licensed entity. And there's quite a lot of costs, legal, management, accounting costs, to actually get the borrower to either reinstate the loan, in other words, make the payments that they've missed, or modify the loan, in other words, forgive payments they have made so that they can get back on, or forgive payments that they have not made. So just wipe those payments away and let them get started again with their old payment. So we're in the business of buying loans where the borrower isn't paying, and then working with them to get them to start paying again. That's really it in a nutshell.
So that seems like it's not a very scalable process. What is actually your process for getting these borrowers who have a sort of a non-performing loan to actually be able to pay back their loans? How does that work?
Well, there are two secrets to it. The first secret is this: if we take a case study, I'm not picking on any bank. In fact, I'll just use Bank A. So if you, let's say your mortgage is with Bank A and it's the biggest bank in your town, and you lose your job for whatever reason and you fall behind 10 or 15 payments on your mortgage. So you're now $15,000 in arrears. You go to your bank and you say, I haven't been paying you, but I found a new job now and I can start paying again. The bank will say to you, terrific, you owe us $15,000 for the payments you've missed. Well, you just, typically the borrower doesn't have $15,000. And so it's now a catch-22, because if the bank gives the borrower a deal and lets them off not paying, making those payments, then the borrower tells all his friends and everyone stops paying, so they can't do that. The other thing the bank can do is they can foreclose on that person, seize their home and sell it and use that to recoup the loan that they issued on the home. But they don't particularly want to do that either, because it looks really bad if the bank in the town is foreclosing on people and taking their houses. The bank doesn't really want to do that. So the least bad option for the bank is to sell it to a fund like ours. And there are many funds like ours, but we're the only one available to the general public that they can invest in. And we'll buy that loan and work with the borrower to get them back on track. Now, that is typically not a scalable process, but we've spent the last 7 years building out all of the technology and processes to do that. So we're a company of just 26 people, but 10 of those people are data scientists and technologists. So wow. We've taken things that up until now have all been paper-based, like very paper-based. We even have fax machines. Like, the banking industry is an antiquated industry, and we scan documents onto a digital fax and fax them to people because they don't have a reliance on email the way we have in the modern era. It's kind of funny, but we're used to, I'm looking at fax machines right now. So we live in the mortgage industry is still in the 80s to some extent.
Wow, that's really fascinating. So, but you found a way to basically work with the borrowers to have them repay their loans and make the loans again performing. And then you basically bundle all those loans and give the return to investors, right? That's essentially the gist of the business. Yeah.
Wow. Sounds easy.
You have a whole little mini securitization industry.
It's similar to that. What the SEC does is they don't rate the securities. They just qualify the operator. So they don't do any analysis. And it's very important now that you bring it up. There are no safe investments. Obviously, you would need to read the offering circular and understand the details of what it is that we do if anyone was ever interested in investing. We pay a target return of 8%, and we pay that monthly. So that's not 8% per month. It's 1/12 of 8% monthly. So they get a payment every month. The investor gets a payment every month. And the fund runs for 5 years. So we'll invest in years 1, 2, and 3. And in years 4 and 5, that's when you're liquidating the loans and holding them or selling them to generate the return. But the thing that attracts a lot of people is that we offer best efforts liquidity. And that means we will redeem your units, your pref share that you buy, the preferred stock that you buy, if we have the cash to do so. So you can imagine we buy a big pool of loans. Those loans make monthly payments. Some of those payments we use to pay a return to our investors. But there's a profit, or there should be a profit, every month. So if some investor comes after a few months or a year or two and says, hey, I want to sell my units back, will you redeem them? That's what we will do if we have the cash to do so.
And there's no restriction on the investor at all? Anyone can go to the website?
Yeah, anyone can go. You don't need to be a qualified investor. And that's the reason why the SEC qualification process takes so long. This is not just for sophisticated high net worth individuals or private equity or those kind of sophisticated professionals. anyone with $250 to invest can invest in this fund. And a lot of people do start out with, you know, just a few hundred or a few thousand dollars just to test the waters for maybe 3 or 4 months, and then they'll come with a larger amount. About half our investors are IRA, checkbook IRA investors, so they'll come in with larger amounts, and they get their 8% a year, which, I mean, I don't know about you, but for quite some time, I had a checkbook IRA with not quite $100,000 in it, but quite a lot of money in it, and it was earning nothing because I never really invested in anything. I was always too busy working, so it's a good way to put some money to work and get a return on assets that are backed by real estate, because you're buying the mortgage, and the mortgage is secured by a house.
So someone goes to the website. They send you that initial information to set up an account, and then they just what do they do from there?
Yeah, when we set it up, because we anticipate we'll have many thousands of investors over the years, we've set it up in a streamlined manner, just like using an online website to book an airfare or whatever. You have to put in your details, and we check that you are who you say you are, and that you're not doing money laundering. That's actually not done by us. It's done by a licensed third party that works for all of the banks to make sure that there's no, you know, proceeds of crime or terrorism or anything like that. And once that's done, the funds are approved. The investor can send money by ACH, so they don't have to pay full wire, over to us. And as soon as the account has been created, they start earning their target return of 8%. It's as simple as that. So it's all online.
Yeah, sounds pretty easy, actually.
Yeah. The account process takes 4, 5, 6 days just to get everything done, and the investor is up and running. We've only had one redemption so far where someone came and said, hey, I need my money back, and that took 3 days. But it all depends on how much cash is available at any one time. It could be that it takes longer, or it could be that we don't have any cash for a reason I can't think of, but there could be such a case. So it's only best efforts. We can't guarantee that.
Excellent. And you're looking to raise your fourth fund, correct?
This is our fourth fund. We're actually just starting on our fifth fund, which will also be an institutional fund. So our first three funds returned 21.5%. Or if you use IRR, it's 17.5%, just a fraction under 17.5%. So the name of the game is to buy the loans, get in contact with the borrowers as quickly as possible, and turn that loan from an asset that is not producing any income at all because the borrower isn't paying, and working out a deal with them to start paying. And the deal comes from wiping away past due payments, reducing their interest rate, or in some cases extending the term. Let's say it's a 15-year loan, well, we'll make it 20 to get the payment low enough that they can afford it and they can make their payment each month.
Interesting. So we're recording this in the middle of what looks to be potentially a recession of sorts, or at least a very big downshift in the market. And I'm wondering, how do you see the downturn in the market affecting your business?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. The first thing is you'll see the Fed funds rate has been dropped significantly over the last couple of days, and yet interest rates have increased. So I think you'll see less liquidity. And less liquidity, that applies to everybody. There just is not that much cash around. So I think the first thing we'll see is our institutional cost of funds will probably increase a little bit. I think the second thing we'll see is banks with distressed assets that they've been sitting on will be motivated to sell them because they don't want to hold non-performing assets when the value of those assets is potentially declining. And the last thing I think you'll see is effectively unemployment is at zero. I mean, I know it's 3.8, I think it is the last print, but anyone who wants a job can find a job of some sort. And I think that when you have full employment or close to full employment and you get a shock like this, I wouldn't be too surprised if we see some increase in unemployment. And unemployment leads to non-payment of mortgage. And non-payment of mortgage leads to mortgage sales. So I think the bad news will be that I expect some increase in unemployment as we probably do enter a recession. Who knows how deep that will be? but I think also our cost of funds will probably increase a little bit. We're pretty much covered in that we're paying our investors 8% or a target 8%. I can't guarantee 8% because the SEC does not allow that. But 8% is a pretty good return. And if we can, if we do see an increase in supply in the banks, as I mentioned, selling more loans, I think you'll probably see that we can buy those loans at a lower price than we've been paying recently, because recently those prices have been not all-time highs, but higher than certainly they've been for the last 10 years.
Wow. You mentioned that you basically have a secret sauce to get the borrowers to pay back. Is there anything that you can share in terms of the techniques that you use so that you can have a better result than a bank?
Well, there's a couple of parts to it. The first part is you need to be rational. And so a lot of these borrowers, they fell into arrears many years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And they've been working with the bank for 5 or 6 years or with the collection agency for 5 or 6 years. And the collection agency says, I need you to repay every penny that you owe. So the borrower might be in a $100,000 home, but they owe $150,000. There's very few borrowers that are going to pay $150,000 for a $100,000 home. They would rather just walk away and let the house get foreclosed. And so there tends to be a very big time lag and communication lag between a borrower who says, hey, I can't afford to pay, and somebody in a bank who's pretty high up saying, well, I need all the money or I'm not doing a deal with you. So we consolidate all of those layers of third parties who are doing the servicing on the loans down into just two layers. So if you say you can't afford to pay, we'll get your hardship package, we call it, but basically it's your financials together, and we can review those in under a week. So we'll take a loan that hasn't been paying in 6 years, and sometimes in as little as 20 or 30 days, we'll have that borrower back performing. Our fastest is 6 days. So the first thing is speed. And the only way to do speed is, well, we can't be relying on fax machines. We can't be relying on snail mail, as people call it. We do almost everything online. And so the borrower can submit their documents very quickly. We can review them very quickly. We have an automated scoring system, which gets us to what we think the borrower can afford. And it stops the back and forth, which can, if you think by mail, it could be several weeks just collecting documents. We can do it much, much more quickly. And then all the documents are executed using an online signature system, and all the loans are paid by ACH auto draft. So the borrower just sets it and forgets it. And it's a lot of kind of things like that that lead up to one point, which is this. If the home is worth $100,000, you're not going to collect more than $100,000 from that home. And the second thing is, if the cost of renting that $100,000 home is, let's say, $700, if you can make the borrower's payment less than what it would cost to rent that house, the borrower has got a big incentive to keep paying. Because they could even rent the place out if they want. We don't particularly mind if they rent it out. We just want them to pay consistently. But if you're trying to charge them a payment that is more than the house would rent for, then they're just going to fall into arrears again. And so you may get paid for a month or two or six, but at some point in the future, they're going to stop paying again.
It doesn't sound like there'd be much interest, or maybe you'd be going beyond your expertise using this platform for other types of assets?
Yeah, we will be using it for other types of assets, but that's a little bit in the future. We're building out the fintech part of the business, because the same problems apply in all sorts of debt. So some corporate debt, but automobile debt, credit card debt, it's the same problem that applies everywhere. And so anyone who's ever gotten into financial difficulties knows what it's like to be called by a collection agency. And it's some person reading a script, and they're not really there to help. They're really there to just get the cash. And so we don't believe that that's the best way forward. We believe the best way forward is to truly understand the client, figure out why they stopped paying, and work on a plan that they can afford to keep making payments on. And we started with mortgage because it's the most difficult, the most legally constrained. There's the most amount of rules and regulations. So if you can do that at a world-class level, then other things like auto or credit card or other forms of debt is a lot more easy to optimize.
Well, yeah, it's a really interesting business model. It sounds like you found an area that was not being served very well, which is exactly a great thing to look for when you're looking for a business, and really helping out with that.
Do you get to pick the loans that you buy, or do you just buy them as the bank sell them? How does that work?
It's a good question, Steve. It's like there's an old joke in the bond industry, which is a fixed income type of a business, just like the mortgage industry. And that is, there are no bad loans, just bad prices. And so sometimes a bank will come to you and say, here is a loan, or here's a pool of loans. I need your best price on every single one of those loans. And there's five other people bidding on them. Or sometimes a bank will come to you and say, hey, I know these loans are really, really bad. I need a price, and I need the price by close of play tomorrow. And so it really depends on what the seller wants to do. There is a price for every loan. And of course, just like everything, no one wants to buy the really bad loans. They all want to buy the easy to fix loans. But unfortunately, that's not a luxury that's afforded to us. We need to buy what we're offered, or the bank won't come back to you again. So we tend not to cherry pick. We try and be a solution to the bank who want to move these assets off their balance sheet. And we have the systems and processes to operate at scale. So we don't need to just buy the good ones. We can buy them all, and hopefully buy them at a lower blended price, because we're taking the good with the bad.
Great.
Yeah, thanks for joining us on the FinTech Newscast. Great to have you on. It's very interesting, and a very simple solution to a very difficult, complex problem.